Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is once again AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net is an institution. It's almost been going on for 40 years, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. And once again, I find myself Sunday night at 8 p.m., so here I is. As always, let me drop, and I will tell you about all the available links. Okay. If you need to contact me and you can't reach me on the repeater, then email is as good a choice as any. That would be either for mailbag questions, if you couldn't ask the question on the technical net, but you can listen so that you would like to hear the answer, or if you have a topic that you would either like to discuss on the technical net or hear the technical net discuss, or if you have a puzzle. I am perpetually in search of intriguing, interesting technical puzzles, not really trivia, but stuff that has to do with how stuff works, so that we can learn more things as we discuss the concepts behind them. So if you have a physics, electronics, or a science puzzle of that nature, please email it to me. Or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space-related bit of news, you can contact him directly. He's at spacenetreport@gmail.com. But if you would like to email me, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, that's mailbag@ac2gs.com. I maintain a link site with interesting YouTubes, videos, articles that I've seen, a list of interesting news items that are up for conversation if anyone's interested, or you can just read them by yourself. They're there 24/7, so that's available. Just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to my link page with all the interesting links. In addition, we have a chat room available. You can either go to Limark's own website, find the link, click it, and go to the chat room, or you could just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. In addition, I stream audio of the technical net, and I leave it on the rest of the week, so if you don't have a radio and you want to hear what's going on in Glen Oaks, and you have an internet connection, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you there. Also, always like to remind people, MyKC2NJI has a great archive of the technical nets going as far back as September 2006. He's had a million visitors to his website, which is amateurradio.tv, and it's the source for a great deal of wisdom from hams that are still around, thankfully, and unfortunately, those who have become silent keys. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, it's going to be, the standard practice. I will ask for people to give me any questions or topics. I would prefer if the first few questions or topics are amateur technology related. I will take down the people's first name and their call sign, and we'll try and get to them in order. After we exhaust amateur radio technology, then we can pass over to general topics of science, technology, and even medicine. We do not do diagnosis. We do not do treatment over radios. But if you want to discuss the topic, I will try my best. That should take us to about 10:15, and Paul, WS2N, will bring us the SpaceNet report until about 11 o'clock p.m. I'll return and tie it up in a bow and wish you all well and call it a week. So if the repeater, the radio, and other repeaters that have been known to interfere with us in the past allow it, that's the plan for tonight. So I will drop now and ask anyone who has any questions of a technical nature, especially those that are amateur radio related, to please give me your first name and your call sign.
Okay, G2RY, David. Texian, amateur question.
Okay, David and Wesley recognize. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Okay, Sam, you're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? I mean, we'll continue to take names as time allows, but, you know, best to get your name up there at the front of the list so that, you know, sometimes people have other things to do later on during the TechNet and they can't stay in front of the radio. So with that in mind, anyone else want to put their name on the list, please do so now.
82 UDU, Wayne.
Okay, Wayne recognized. One more time. Anyone else out there want to get their name on the list before we start the show? Okay, very well. First on the list tonight is David, KG2ROY. What's your question or your topic or your comment for tonight, David?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everyone. That pro audio thing that I did came out really well, totally successful. My question is, you know, in ham radio especially, how do you get these things to sound good, you know? And I had an ICOM IC718. I'll put a FL257 filter in it for single sideband. And I did whatever I could to get the AM amplitude modulation for a shortwave and AM broadcast to sound good. Now I'm spending most of my time listening to my ST891 with the low cut and high cut shut off. Seems to work really well. Go ahead.
Well, there you touch upon the limitations of the average amateur radio, that most people are not really using AM, and most people who are doing voice are doing standard single sideband. The bandwidth is approximately 3,000 hertz. And sometimes they carve out the bass and they carve out the treble, so it's not even 3,000 cycles. It's difficult to get high fidelity sound, a reproduction of any normal sound with that much of a limitation in your bandwidth. And most amateur radio operators tend to be more focused on intelligibility rather than sonic fidelity. There are sub aspects of the hobby where people are really into fidelity. You mentioned it with AM, not only broadcast, but if you go down to 75 meters, you'll have a lot of very clever guys doing all kinds of clever things, either reconditioning old AM radio technology or discovering new with very, very state-of-the-art digital processing of power supplies and amplifiers, Class E, Class H amplifiers. And in addition, there's something called extended single sideband, which sounds like what it is. Instead of the 3 kilohertz limitations of standard sideband, they extend the sidebands as far as 6K to give heightened fidelity. So there are pockets of amateur radio where fidelity is somewhat more important. I think, though, unfortunately, with the average HF user, you know, it's a different thing on these repeaters. FM is pretty good as far as sound fidelity and frequency distribution. But when you get to single sideband and such, especially people who are slightly off or running a little high or a little low, fidelity isn't as important to them probably as intelligibility. You know, they'll compress things and expand things so that during contests and such, they'll be able to be recognized from afar, even though the sound that they produce is a little harsh and annoying to others.
Well, Roy, I got to say, first of all, there's nothing I could do about what other people are transmitting to me. You know, it is what it is. But I can work on doing something for myself, receiving on the receiving end. With the ICOM IC718 and the IF filter FL257, which is a 3.3 kilohertz IF filter for SSB. They say it makes it sound really good, but the Yaesu FT891 has a capability to go up to 3.2 kilohertz, and the sound is the same. You know, there isn't much difference between one radio and the other. But for amplitude modulation, I found a feature, a menu item inside the FT891, and what it does is you cut the low cut and the high cut so that you get more bandwidth on the AM signal. It sounds a lot better. I realize that I don't need two radios, that one of them will do the job pretty much, and I'm very happy with it. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just trying to make sure you kind of use the double negative. Well, what happened is a lot of times there's a low-pass filter on the audio circuit and there's a high-pass filter on the audio circuit, so it takes a bite out of both ends. And that radio of yours has the ability to turn that off so that you hear the bass and you hear the treble more, right?
QSL, for the most part, the difference isn't really that much. You know, I can hear it, but it isn't that much.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's a case of the weakest link. In order to get the most benefit for that, you would need someone transmitting who also had their low-end and high-end filters turned off, because otherwise you wouldn't really be picking up that much of a difference. You have to think in terms of the transmitter and the receiver. And true, you can't affect other people's transmissions. You can just kind of optimize it as best you can. And so for those who are interested in higher fidelity transmission and have produce a kind of broader bandwidth by adjusting your audio filters so that they take in the entire spectrum of the transmitted signal, you improve the fidelity. I know some people who have a bunch of different radios. They use them at different times, and they have different capability. One gentleman that I talk to a great deal on my 10-meter net has a Flex 3000, which are capable of adjusting the bandwidth. He has his set to about, I think it's almost 4 kilocycles. And so with him, if you widen up the filtration, you are able to pick up the highs a little bit better. But when he's using other radios that are standard 2.7 kilocycle bandwidths, when you deal with the low and the high-end cutoff of 3,000, there's not much you can do. You can widen it for your own benefit, but since he's not really transmitting any signals on those frequencies, it doesn't really reproduce anything useful.
On the FT891, the low cut and the high cut are for AM. I use them when I'm listening to broadcast, either shortwave or medium wave. And single sideband, you know, I can go as wide as 3.2 kilohertz, which is about the same as the IC718. You know, the IC7300 also goes up to 3.2, 3.3 kilohertz, and 3.4. And the FTDX10 goes up to 4, like 4.1, 4, 4.1. So you can go wider, and it is continuous. You can select anywhere in between, depending on the band conditions and what's coming through.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much it's up to the electrical engineer how he's going to design things. It has, to a degree, important whether it's a software-defined radio like the 10DXs. The 10DX is defined as a narrow-band SDR. What it really is it's a standard analog radio with an IF stage. The IF stage beats down the frequency to a smaller frequency. In transistor radios, we used to have IF stages with IF transformers for, I think, 455 kilocycles. Whatever the IF they decide on for that model Yaesu is the bandwidth that gets fed into an analog-to-digital converter and is able to be utilized by SDR circuits. So it's more amenable to adjusting the bandwidth. On my Flex radio, which is an SDR, I can widen a single sideband as far as, I think, 6 kilocycles into the extended single sideband range. I never have done it because I've never felt the need to do it, but there have been cases of that being seen on 75 meters. I've seen rather wide transmission signals that kind of indicated they were running a really wide bandwidth.
Well, you know, the IC718, if you don't put a filter in there, narrow or wide, the default bandwidth is 5.0 kilohertz, you know, so you basically have to listen to everything at 5.0 kilohertz.
Okay, that's really wide for a single sideband. Again, the standard, as far as I'm aware, that most people tend to use is something like 2.7. So I guess they keep their filters in, because a lot of people frown on extended single sideband transmissions. The other people's attitude is these people are taking up two slots on the band. You know, if they stayed within their 2.7 kilocycles, you could fit in two different conversations that don't interfere with each other versus an extended single sideband that's as much as 6 kilocycles. Interesting to know. Well, every model is designed differently, and as I said, it's ultimately up to the electrical engineer of what he wants to set the band range to and the filters that are designed to operate or be exchanged. You know, some older radios have plug-in modules where you can plug in different roofing filters.
QSL. Well, you know, with the Fox Tango 891, you can go from 0.5 to 3.2 kilohertz for a single sideband, and it's continuous. So you basically, in steps of 100 hertz, you can go, you know, from 0.5 to 3.2 on single sideband.
Okay, that's interesting. I have narrowed bandwidths when I've had problems with interference from other people who weren't exactly on frequency but very close by. And I have found in my personal experiences, if you narrow it single sideband, again, this is on the reception side, not the transmission side, but if you narrow it past something like 1.6, 1.7, you chop off so much of the signal that it makes it significantly difficult, for me at least, to intelligibly interpret the transmissions.
QSL, the 891, the default is 2.4 kilohertz. which is if you don't press the WDH button, you know, you'll get 2.4 kilohertz. Sometimes it's sort of nice to spread it out to about 2.8.
Yeah, as I said, but I find that most people are transmitting something along the line of a 2.7 kilocycle band signal. So as long as there's no excessive noise in one portion of that bandwidth, you know, receiving the entire signal is usually the best for my ears. Sometimes I can figure out what people are saying, but if it's a lot of effort, you get kind of tired after a short amount of time. Listening fatigue is not uncommon on the HF bands. You pick up a little bit of an ability to figure out things that are full of static and interference and fading issues and all kinds of things. But your brain has to work extra hard to do those internal translations. So it's always nice to have a pleasant signal to listen to where your mind doesn't have to work quite so hard to reconstruct it.
QSL, I guess they call that ease of communication. There's this external speaker by Talstar called the Ultimate Communication Speaker. Do you have any idea about this, and could you maybe recommend a good external speaker, you know, that doesn't cost an arm and a leg?
Well, I mean, the problem are that all these amateur radio-related speaker enclosures, especially the ones without any extra electronics, are more, I think, for show, that they're kind of designed to look attractive next to your receiver. And so that usually means that they want you to pay an extra premium. There is a company for people who do not have radios, or some of their radios do not have signal processing circuits built into them. They're of a certain age. I think it's BHI. It makes some very nice speaker enclosures which include their own digital signal processing. So they have some particularly useful algorithms for noise reduction. Those would be the cases that I would really think it would be a good idea to buy something that's solely amateur radio related. Otherwise, a good generic speaker system that's well shielded, something with not the fanciest of names that we all have to pay premiums for, is probably the most cost effective thing to do. You know, I have two Palstar antenna tuners. They're nice. I don't know exactly what Palstar would bring to the speaker enclosure world. I don't think they do any digital signal processing, so it's purely just a shielded amplifier. And I think you probably can find less expensive versions of that elsewhere.
QSL, Roy. I think we talked about this before, but there's a speaker and parametric equalizer that go together, two different items made by Heil Sound. And again, you know, I'm really kind of nervous to get a speaker that has an amplifier in it because of the RF and the potential for RF. So I'm still looking. Maybe that Palstar's got a 6.5-inch speaker in it. And they say it has some bass, and I really want to get the bass.
Well, I would assume the guy who's the president and the chief executive officer is also their chief engineer, so it's not a big problem to test the shield quality of the speaker. There are, in my experiences at least, a lot of manufacturers that build nicely shielded powered amplifiers. I have one sitting on my desk that I use for the radio that I've never had any RF problems with, and there are a lot of them out there. And probably, if you get on some of these forums and ask around, a lot of people will tell you good stories and bad stories. So there's a lot of good speaker designs out there. It's not a novelty at this point for good RF shielding for these enclosures. And as far as the parametric equalizer, if your radio doesn't offer something like that and you think that you'd enjoy that type of an equalizer, then, yeah, it's I've used both graphic equalizers and parametric equalizers. Their operations are a little different. That it's kind of what you particularly like. If you know, some people like mice, others like trackballs. They both serve about the same purpose in a slightly different way.
QSL, I think we can conclude with this conversation with that. From what I can see, you know, these speakers, they're smaller than the ones I have, you know. And, you know, the speaker, the actual speaker cone, you know, from top to bottom, from side to side, diameter, smaller than the ones I have, so maybe I just stick with these. And I got them on the internet, you know, and I have two of them made by Cobra speakers for CB. And they work pretty good, and they're really, you know, easy on the pocketbook.
Yeah, if it works for you, then that's great. And, you know, you don't really need extra bass as far as amateur radio, as we talked before. A lot of times the electrical circuitry in radios for amateurs cuts off at a certain point. Even if you don't have the cutoff filter, you know, it's not going to be transmitting 60 and 50 hertz signals because that's deemed to probably just be a leakage from the power supply. So if it works for you, then so be it. I mean, in my shack, which is also my computer room, which is also kind of an office and a library and all kinds of fun stuff, I have a subwoofer stuck in the corner for when I'm playing music. But I don't particularly use it for when I'm working the radio because I don't want a subwoofer for radio transmissions, or certainly amateur radio transmissions. It's not like there's a lot of guys transmitting subaudible tones of any use.
QSL Roy, I have a subwoofer on my stereo. My stereo is connected to my computer through DAC, and, you know, so I have the privilege of using a playlist, you know, and having different playlists that I can play through my stereo. Subwoofer is great on the stereo. I wouldn't put a subwoofer on my Pro Audio. Although, you know, my friend, and I set it up for him with a 8-inch subwoofer, and he thought that there was too much bass.
Well, like all things, you have to kind of tweak things. A regular hi-fi subwoofer with little desktop main speakers is probably way overpowering the low bass tone. So less is always more when it comes to bass.
I instructed him to go into iTunes under Window, I think it's Window, and then you go to Equalizer, Graphic EQ. You go to the Equalizer, take some bass out of the signal. He realized he liked it kind of flat with less bass, a little bit less treble, but, you know, he personally, in his hearing, you know, he thought that was the right thing for his music. So how to say for ham radio, listening to ham radio, I think it's sort of like this. I think you need to get a speaker. The speaker itself has to be at least 4.5, 4.25 inches, you know, so you get the fullness of the sound. But not too much treble, not too much bass.
Okay, I mean, ultimately it depends. My desktop speakers have two speakers in them. The mid-range is only about 3 inches in diameter. The tweeter's about an inch and a quarter, maybe. And that supplies most of the frequency range, at least for my ears. As I said, I have a subwoofer when I'm listening to music. And a lot of times when I'm operating radios, I'm using a headset. And the headset diaphragms are often something on the order of 1.5 to 2 inches in diameter, and it lets me reproduce sound reasonably well for my purposes. So a lot of my amateur radio listening I do through headsets anyway. I can always do it through the headphones as well. And, you know, when I'm listening around to the FM or other frequencies and I'm not having a conversation with someone fading in and out, you know, I'll listen over the speakers hooked up to my computer, which is hooked up to my radio. But otherwise, I go for my headsets. Even now, I'm using a very lightweight headset. I've grown accustomed. I have a rather heavier Radio Sport, sturdier one, with a closed ear design for HF. And this one that I'm using tonight is an open ear, lightweight one that I use for FM.
QSL, Roy, it's good to have like an area where you have your computer and your ham radio gear and everything in one place.
AC2GS. Yes, indeed. I like this little shack design. I kind of built it little by little. The computer was already here. The amateur radio equipment kind of merged with it. Anyone curious out there, if you look up my call sign on QRZ, you probably even see my computer screen set up for an episode of Science Talk for one of the past technical nets 3-4 years ago.
QSL, Roy, I'm going there now. I'm going to your page here. You got a picture of your QSL card, just a list of stuff that you have. Well, the radio, that system looks very nice. Looks like you got a lot of computer monitors there. Is that the tuner, the PALSTAR tuner? Let's see. Aren't they all? That's all, folks. I thought you were going to have a whole pile of pictures there. Looks like fun.
Yeah, I find it very functional. I mean, it's not the most aesthetic collection. It's a little bit different now than it was when I took that picture. I have an extra PALSTAR. That one is my manual PALSTAR. I also have a HF auto PALSTAR so that I can have one antenna on one tuner and another antenna on another and listen to both signals at the same time. It's useful. I put most of my radio equipment basically on a repurposed television cart from the old days when televisions were smaller, and everything fits there reasonably well. There's a bit of a rat's nest going on in the back where you can see the radiator, but you know, it serves my purpose. I've gotten many years of good service out of pretty much the same shack configuration.
QSL looks fantastic, I have to say, and sort of like fun, I guess, maybe to photograph your shack with like a panoramic view. So you know, it's sort of like 9x16 and like an aspect ratio.
Yeah, there's all kinds of nice ways to do that. The problem is you really have to clean up your shack, and most shacks, including mine, tend to get a little disorderly over the years. So you kind of clean it up for a certain portion of it and then take nice, pretty pictures of it. But, yeah, one of these days I will do another photo shoot. There is a very nice amateur radio operator who lives in New Jersey who is actually a professional photographer. And you can sort of tell it when you land on his QRZ page It's very artsy. There are almost all kinds of interesting optical effects. It doesn't look like someone just took a picture of a bunch of stuff in a room. It had a lot of atmosphere in it. So, for those people who would like to have their amateur radio equipment professionally photographed, I don't think he does that as a profession because it's a very narrow thing to do, and most amateur radio operators don't really like to spend a lot of money in general, so they wouldn't want to have artsy pictures of their shack, I would guess. But I always find it fascinating to see other people's shack. It gives me insight into the operator.
QSL, Roy. I'll put some of my artworks on my page.
Yeah, that would be nice to see. I'm a little sad occasionally when I look people up on QRZ and they haven't written anything. They don't have any pictures. It's just a blank screen. I could sort of understand they're not really interested in that. I don't have a Facebook page or anything like that, but I just saw this as an interesting place to just kind of give people a sense of who I am besides what they hear on the radio.
KG2RY. Well, Roy, every time I work somebody on HF, you know, before I even call them, you know, I look at their page, you know, always look at their page. And for the most part, you know, it makes it even more entertaining. You already know something about them, so you can have something to talk about.
I agree, and often I will, especially the way I have everything set up, it's just one click away, and I'll sort of do the same thing. And sometimes I'll find out fascinating stuff, and I'll ask them about pictures that I see on their page, a dog they might have, an antenna they're showing off, and I think that's nice, and again, I think that kind of adds to the experience. Dick used to do that all the time, including here on the technical net. There were times there was a little confusion because there are people whose legal name is not the name they like to use, and so he would look up a call sign, and it would, you know, the first name would be Richard, and he would say, keep calling the guy Richard, and the guy says, no, I want to be called Charles, because Charles apparently would be his middle name. So I used to hear that all the time on the technical net. But, yeah, I enjoy it, too. I had one guy, and I think I mentioned this before on the technical net, who kind of skeeved me a little bit. I think he was a part-time real estate broker. So in addition to looking me up on QRZ, which I'm fine with, he looked me up on Zillow and found a house that was a copy of my house because I live in one of these kind of cookie-cutter designed houses. You see strings of them. And he was critiquing the amount of square feet in my rooms, which was a little weird.
Well, I tell people that, you know, I live in one room. I live in a studio apartment in downtown Manhattan. And I tell them I'm running 100 watts, a dipole, and a stock mic, and they get really angry.
Well, I don't think that's fair on anyone's part. I think we had this conversation with a different person where the person on the other end of the conversation was doing the heavy lifting. They had the 100-foot towers with the massive multi-band beam arrays and such, and so they were sort of doing the heavy lifting. But, you know, you use what you can. I mean, no, not everyone has the square footage of everyone else. I mean, you know, people out there in Florida, one of the attractors is land, for the most part, is inexpensive. You can buy a whole bunch of land and put an antenna farm on it. But not everyone can live or wants to live in Florida. So, I don't know. I try never to feel jealousy, envy, or pity for anyone's setup. They're doing the best they can under the circumstances.
You know, but Roy, I have to say, I always compliment them if they have great equipment, great antennas, whatever it is, you know, and quite fantastic, you know. They give me 5-9 signal report, and then I tell them, you know, 100 watts, dipole, and stock mic. They just don't get, you know, they get heated up. And to say, maybe I just shouldn't tell them that.
I don't think you need to be overly sensitive. I mean, people have their own baggage and they carry it around all over the place. I would just be open and honest. Sometimes people brag. I mean, there's a difference between describing your stuff and boasting your stuff. There was a gentleman who used to be a frequent presence on the repeater. And at one point, he was trying to explain a recent purchase. Rather than give the model number of the ICOM radio he had purchased, the way he chose to describe it is, you know, the most expensive ICOM that they sell. I tended to think at that point that was more of a boast than it was just stating facts. But, you know, again, everyone is free to be themselves. They can't be anyone else. Yes, Greg.
Ding dong in the background.
Say again, Greg. Do you mean that there's some suspicious noises being transmitted around there?
There's like some kind of ding dong when you were transmitting. Was that like from your computer or something? It's like a ding dong. Like, where's that coming from?
I do not know. It is not from here, so it is probably someone out there who in another life was a Foley editor. Foley editors are those guys in movies who produces the sound effects.
You cut out for a second, I heard the ding again, and then you came back on, so I figure I'd just ask. No worries. KD2OGB.
Yes, occasionally people listening have a little too much free time, and I don't know, they want to add their own creativity to the mix. So don't concern yourself too much with it, Greg. It's usually nominal, and it's best left where it is.
Yeah, I heard it too, Roy.
Yeah, well, I also hear strange things when I unkey and there's a string of hash noises going on. So, again, it's the price you pay for transmitting in the area. Nothing you can do about it.
QSL, QSL. Well, I still think that ham radio is fantastic and that, you know, it's a great thing to do and... people can derive a lot of fulfillment and, satisfaction from the hobby. I'll pass it along to the next person in line. And thanks again, Roy, for your insight. This is KG2R1.
AC2GS. Well, welcome. Thank you, David. I appreciate your participation of the technical net. And I'm sure you'll have some interesting questions or comments or topics in the weeks coming up ahead. Let's go to the next person on the amateur list. I think Wesley indicated that he was going to be going for the general science topic. So, Sam, KD2NSJ, what's your question or your topic for tonight?
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Good evening, boy. No, I just had three quizzes. You always ask for a quiz. So I got three of them. But I'll do them at the end, okay?
Okay. I just want to make sure that we're on the same frequency. The end of what? Because what we kind of have going on is we take amateur radio questions, then we open them up to a broader spectrum of science, and then we go on to the SpaceNet report. So where in that section would you like me to place your slot?
The guy in front of me, let him go. And then near the end, before the space thing, they say, okay, Sam, what questions you got? You know, they just quiz questions, ham radio and trivia. So it can wait. I'll wait on him.
Okay, Sam, so I guess we'll now move on to Wayne, KD2UDU. What's your question or your topic or your comment for tonight, Wayne? Well, there definitely is someone without the Christmas spirit tonight, just kind of hitting his little buttons and such. Let me see if I can get through to Wayne again, KD2UDU. Do you have any questions or topics? You mentioned your name at the top of the hour. Well, I guess Wayne either stepped away or because of the guy playing with his radio can't hear me. So let's say we go back to Sam, and you wanted to do a couple of quiz questions or something? Yes, I'm ready, Sam.
Okay. Which of these has a ham license and talk on the radio? Alice Cooper, Joe Walsh, Jim Croce, or Ronnie Mishap?
Joe Walsh. Did you hear me, Sam? Joe Walsh is a noted AM operating amateur radio operator. Alice Cooper is a good golfer, I'm told, but I don't think he uses amateur radio.
Nope, it was Alice Cooper. Yeah, Joe Walsh does. But Alice Cooper, and they gave his call sign. Hold on, I'm sorry. Alice Cooper was not the one. You're right, Joe Walsh. He has a call sign WB6ACU, Jim Croce WN3OQW, and Ronnie Mishap WB4KCG.
Yeah, like I said, Alice Cooper, very good golfer, but no radio. Matter of fact, Joe Walsh used to tell the story of how he got involved in amateur radio, and it was actually in New York. He had a very lonely childhood. His parents apparently used to move all over the country, and so he never developed long-term friends. And there was one point where the family had moved to New York City, and he was just wandering around the neighborhood and saw this guy's house with these big antennas going into the sky, and he knocked on the door and asked what that was about, and he got himself a new hobby, which he's stuck with when he was on tour or on the bus. He carried around radio equipment, and he's a good friend of Heil, Jim Heil, who is the designer of many amateur radio and high-fidelity equipment. Joe Walsh is a biggie with AM. I don't know if the other two hams are active. I assume, isn't Jim Croce, didn't he pass away a long, long time ago?
Yes, and thanks for the background, yep. I didn't have to say, yeah, he did have a rough life, and he did start radio way back.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that have bought the reconditioned broadcast AM transmitters and modified them to use on the HF bands. Very heavy duty, very big into the AM radio niche of amateur radio.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to him or ever hear him?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, of all the amateurs that I, the famous amateurs that I knew, the one that I really would have loved to have had the experience to have a conversation with was Gene Shepard. Gene Shepard was an amateur radio operator from his childhood, and he used to tell stories on WOR. He had stories of when he went to the FCC office and took the exam. He even talked about Colpitts oscillators. Those were the days that it wasn't a multiple choice question. They were pretty much essay and circuit design questions in which, you know, the question would be, draw the schematic for a Colpitts oscillator, include the value of the discrete components and such like that. And he used to tell that story on WOR back in the 70s.
Okay. All right, Jan. Okay, the second one was, besides talking on the ham radio, this famous newscast, okay, way back now, about 69, spent most of his life talking into a microphone for a living. Who is he? I have to give you a hint, so, but there's a lot of them.
Can I guess?
He got his license, retired from CBS News. Oh, I'll tell you who worked with him. He was a CBS newsman, okay? Chet Hundley, David Brinkley were co-anchors on the television broadcast. And Dan Rather replaced them. So who's the guy I'm talking about?
AC2GS. I probably could have guessed it without the hints, because it sounded like you were talking about good old Walter Cronkite.
You're two for two. You know, I knew I couldn't even came on the line. Because I'm in your ballpark. I'm just a player, okay?
Well, there's a funny story about Walter. Let me drop to see if I have it. You know, Walter Cronkite, we all saw him, especially in the 60s, whenever the NASA flights was. He was a science fan, so he was the guy who anchored a lot of that. And Carl Sagan was interviewed by him, and, you know, he was everyone's grandfather. You would sort of think that Walter Cronkite was one of those guys who got his license when he was a teenager, but in fact, I think he first got his license after he retired from reporting. So he was not an amateur radio operator for the majority of his life. It was something that he decided to do, I think, in retirement.
You're right. He didn't start till he retired, and he had a radio on his boat. And he really got hooked into it. I just saw something about Gene Shepard. His call sign was K2ORS, and he wrote and narrated a classic film, You'll Shoot Your Eye Out. I don't remember that film, though. You'll Shoot Your Eye Out, and the other one was Who Is It? Yeah, Gene Shepard.
His big movie was The Christmas Story. It's played every Christmas. It's about a kid in a steel mill town who wants to get a BB gun, and that's where the thing about shooting his eye out comes from. But it's A Christmas Story.
Yeah, you're right. And I was just looking, Raise the Titanic. He was in that also, in the Hardy Boys series. Wow. Okay. All right, let me get to the last one. Oh, I'm not giving you no hints. Okay. This is a lady. Her call sign is K5PSG. You know, I looked it up, Roy, and it's a new person that has that number now. Well, I guess they ran out and started reusing it. There's a guy that has this number now. It's K5PSG. Her name is Peggy Sue, and her then-boyfriend wrote a song about her. Who was this famous CBL rock and roller?
Okay, this is going to be the case. Yeah, the guy who sang Peggy Sue, obviously. I forget, you know, I have his image in my head. I'm not the greatest guy with names. But, you know, if you told me, I would recognize it immediately. But, yeah, I heard the story that, you know, he died in a plane crash. But his girlfriend that he named it after was a amateur radio operator. In addition, just to kind of backtrack for a second, a lot of people reuse call signs. Gene Shepard's call sign, K2ORS, was picked up by a low-frequency enthusiast, and still he goes by it. So it's a famous call sign that he was able to pick up because I guess no one noticed that it was available. But I can't remember Billy something. I forget. Again, he died in a car crash. He was a big rock and roller. You know, he's the kind of cited in that song American Pie because he was one of the major people in rock and roll.
Buddy Holly, NY2H.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Lou. Buddy. I thought it was Billy, but yeah, Buddy Holly. Okay. I could have Googled it, but I didn't.
I knew Lou was back there somewhere. 1959. Lou and I were in high school then. Yeah, Buddy Holly.
Okay. Very good, Sam. An interesting set of questions. Thankfully, I kind of heard them all before, because unfortunately, there aren't that many famous amateur radio operators out there. You know, there's a few. In the old days, everyone used to mention Senator Barry Gold. I'm blocking on the senator's name. Gold something. I forget. Lou, what's the senator's? Goldwater. Yes, Barry Goldwater.
K2NFJ. Thank you, Roy. A real quick one for you, Roy and Lou. Now I know Lou is there. Jerry Scott or Jerry Tucker played the spoiled rich kid on his popular series. What was the name of that series? His call sign was W2MFW.
Okay, at this point you finally have lost me. I'm assuming that this was a show in the late 50s. In the late 50s, I was about 3 years old, 4 years old, and didn't really take notes. So, Lou, age before beauty?
I think it was the Argang comedies.
Lou, you on the money. I'm not coming back on this radio. Yep, he played it. Our gang episode in about six movies. Then you're right, Roy, in 1942, I'm reading it, he quit acting and joined the U.S. Navy and was wounded. And then, you know, when he came back,